Welcome to the Horses Equine Innovators Podcast, sponsored by Zoetis Animal Health. I'm your host, Stephanie Church, Editor-in-Chief at The Horse. Every day, researchers at universities and other institutions around the world are investigating new ways to care for and understand our horses and the horse industry. In this podcast series, we talk to those innovators to learn more about their work. First, a message from our sponsor. Now introducing Core EQ Innovator from Zoetis, the first and only vaccine to protect against all five potentially fatal core equine diseases in a single injection. Talk to your veterinarian today to schedule your horse's spring vaccination with Core EQ Innovator. Okay, let's get started with today's conversation. Right now, many of us are in the throes of managing horses during winter. We're lugging heavy barn doors shut at night, and some of us are working our horses in indoor arenas. This makes today's topic, horse barn and indoor arena ventilation, especially relevant. Our guest today is Dr. Morgan Hayes, Assistant Extension Professor in Biosystems Engineering within the University of Kentucky's College of Engineering. Dr. Hayes is a unique combination of vocations. She's both an engineer and an extension specialist focused on animal husbandry. She works to find ways to improve environments to which animals are exposed by providing education on ventilation, energy, water, and temperature requirements in barns. Welcome, Dr. Hayes.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So tell me a little about your role at UK and your research focus.
Sure. So my role is a three-way split. I teach, I do research, and I provide support for farmers in the state. And horse owners, obviously. And my research really focuses on the facilities that animals are housed in. I really am passionate about providing the best housing that we can for animals so that they are productive and healthy.
Thank you. So how did you end up researching topics that impact horses?
That's an interesting question. So I grew up thinking that I was going to be a veterinarian, which I think most people that are passionate about animals do. And I found my home in engineering. I am in a family of engineers. So when I started in college, I really focused in on agricultural engineering as a way to mesh my passion for animals and my love of engineering. And over time, I've worked with a bunch of animals, livestock species, poultry, pigs, dogs, you can hear one in the background here, cattle. And also, when I came to Kentucky and started my position here, I saw a real need in the horse industry to provide some support to farmers and horse owners that really are struggling with barn environments.
Okay. So tell me about those things that you saw. How did you see that need? What were some things you saw in the barns and arenas?
Sure. So one of the things that was really interesting is when I first started at Kentucky, I had a graduate student who was interested in joining my group. And she had spent 20 years, you know, working with horses, training, riding, grooming. And she really made me aware of a lot of the facets of the horse industry, something I hadn't been familiar with prior to meeting her. And we ended up in a lot of really interesting discussions about what the needs were for the horse industry, specifically challenges within the barns. And then we ended up on a really in-depth discussion about indoor arenas. Something that I had no experience with prior to meeting her, and something which we found in looking at the data, there's not a lot of information out there at all right now for someone who wants to build or manage an indoor arena. There's not a lot of guidance, you know, available for horse owners and managers.
Yeah, so for many of our listeners, it's winter and an indoor arena is a big part of their lives right now. What is it about indoor arenas that make them difficult to aerate or to provide ventilation in?
Well, there's a couple challenges. One of the really challenging things about an indoor arena is anticipating the animals, the number of animals that are going to be working at one time, however many horses that is, the time of day at which we're trying to do it. Also, you know, the arena footing tends to be dusty. A lot of people are trying to manage dust due to that footing. And what they end up doing is they a lot of times use water as a management strategy, which is effective. But there's a fine balancing act between putting enough water on the footing to keep the dust down, but not so much water that it rains on your head while you're riding in the arena.
Indeed. And you also have to think about it freezing and such too this time of year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you don't want your footing to freeze. That would be really challenging. And people generally want to be comfortable when they ride. So there's also that balancing act that people want to close the arena up to try and keep it a little bit warmer. But if it's overly closed, it tends to be very stale. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell me about the research that you are conducting right now on indoor arenas. How have you gone about collecting your information?
So we knew anecdotally when we started working on this project that people were going to have issues with the environment in the indoor arena. But the first step in the process was to send out an anonymous online survey. And we had over 400 responses on the survey from different horse owners, riders, trainers that use these arenas. And what we found was that people were very concerned about the environment. You know, over 70% of them expressed concerns about both dust and also excessive moisture in these arenas. And people also expressed concerns about lack of air movement. So once we knew that these environmental concerns really existed, the next step was to start going out and making assessments of some of these arenas. So we've been out to, I'd say, between 30 and 40 arenas, specifically here in central Kentucky. And what we've been doing is measuring the spatial variability in lighting, air temperature, air speeds, humidity levels, roof temperatures, floor temperatures, all sorts of things within the arena, just trying to understand how that arena functions. And currently we have a number of arenas that we're measuring the environment over time so we can see how much it varies throughout the day. Hopefully we can then sort of compile all this data. It'll give us enough information to start making some guidance recommendations for those people that are managing these arenas.
That's really interesting. So can you describe just the range of types of arenas that you've seen? Have some of them had like stalls right around the edges of the arena? Is the barn separate? What types of arenas have you seen so far?
Absolutely. So one of the things that's actually pretty interesting, we've actually looked at both just covered arenas, independent arenas that stand alone, arenas with stalls attached, arenas where the stalls are attached through a breezeway. And we are pretty careful to note sort of that interaction because having the horses in stalls within the arena adds another facet to the challenge because then we're housing the horses and we're managing the arena as a riding surface simultaneously. And it gets a little bit trickier when we have both things happening at once.
I would imagine. So what have you found so far?
So what we found so far is that some people really have a pretty good handle on how to manage their footing, and other people find it more challenging. There's a lot of different materials that we use as footing within the arena, and they have different characteristics. We've been working on some extension publications specifically about that footing and the management of it, because I think for a lot of people that is a good first step. We also know that most arenas don't have great ventilation. They don't instinctively approach that as one of their primary thoughts when they build an arena, mainly because the people that build arenas are people that build large pole structures, and ventilation isn't their primary focus.
Yes, indeed. I rode in an arena on Sunday. It was about 22 degrees outside. I don't know what I was thinking, but It was a covered arena out near Paris, Kentucky, and it was lovely. Like the footing was well maintained. You know, I could tell that this was a comfortable space both in a 22 degree day, and I'm sure it is when it's 95 degrees in the summer and humid too. So some people really do it right.
Oh, absolutely. And it's an expensive investment for people that have put in an indoor arena. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that's so important for us that we get to sort of the heart of some of these issues and we provide some really good guidance, because we know that people make major investments in these structures. And we want to make sure that we're providing them at the end of this study with the information that they need to build a better arena that's going to last longer and that they're going to be more happy using.
So what we're going to end up with is some kind of design guide, right? Is there something that we will be able to contact our extension agent and receive, or
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That is our goal, is to provide our guidance in a format that it's available to the public. One of the real benefits of having an extension and a research component to my job is that, you know, we get to go out and do this science and then we get to directly apply it to producers. One of our goals is to make sure that not only is it relevant here in Kentucky, but that we make sure that that guidance is relevant across the U.S. So that everyone has access to that kind of information.
Well, I definitely look forward to seeing that once it's available. So let's go ahead and move on to barns. So this time of year in colder climates, we see a lot of barns with the barn doors closed and sometimes even the windows. So tell me about what's happening there. What level of shutting up the barn is good for our horses, and maybe what isn't so much?
Sure. So I always like to preface this with, people shut up barns for the most part for their comfort. You know, instinctively, when we close up the doors, on the barns and all the windows, we're doing it because it's more comfortable for us to muck out a stall or to clean an alleyway or to do whatever, not completely bundled up with our heavy mittens and hats and gloves on. The horses themselves are actually very adaptable. Their thermoneutral zone, even on a clipped horse, would go down to about 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So the horses do extremely well in cooler climates. It's really us as humans that don't do well in those cooler climates. So we want to really be careful when we think about opening or closing a barn that we're doing it for the horse's benefit, because if we close it up too tight, we do end up with some air quality issues in those barns.
Indeed. And you're talking about these thermoneutral zones for horses, and you've studied other types of animals. I'm just curious, where on the spectrum does the horse land? Since you've worked with pigs and cows and other animals.
Sure. So cows have a slightly larger thermoneutral zone. They go a little bit lower. But generally, you know, the cows and the horses, because of how their body digests grasses and other materials, they tend to be really good and efficient, and they produce a lot of heat in those processes. Also, they're big animals, and that helps them as well. Smaller animals like pigs tend to be a little bit narrower on their thermoneutral zone. Interestingly, chickens, because they have all those feathers, they're actually really adaptable as well. I always think it's interesting to note too, something like a cat doesn't actually do well in the cold as much as they are extremely adaptable to the warmer temperatures. So typically, there's cows and horses that are really good at colder temperatures tend to have heat stress maybe a little bit earlier than those smaller animals that tend to handle a little bit more heat better, but don't handle the cold quite as well.
That's so interesting. I know we have a variety of critters in our barn. We have the horses, of course, and then we have the cats that wander through, and the dogs also. And I know that some of my friends who manage horses, they have chickens in their farm as well. So thinking about all the species as we manage our animals. So when you're talking about the barn being closed up and how it creates some issues, so what you're saying is that if my window on my stall is broken and there's like a little air coming through, that's not a bad thing, right?
No, providing a little fresh air specifically into the stall is a good thing. And most barns are designed for natural ventilation. So most either have some opening at the eave, or you're able to crack a window or something like that to bring fresh air into the stall. And then if the barn is set up correctly, all that air can exhaust out through like cupolas that are up in the ridge of the roof, at the peak of the roof. And the heat from the horse being in that stall is going to cause some of that stale air to rise anyway. So if we can set up the barn to bring a little bit of fresh air right into the stall, it is absolutely a good thing for those horses.
And what about closing up those barn doors as soon as we get there at night? I know that when we walk in, we're chilled and we want to do our the barn aisle can be like a wind tunnel sometimes, just because there is good ventilation. So when we shut that up, do we need to crack those doors at night when we're ready to go home, or?
It depends on the barn and how it's oriented and set up. In some cases, we can actually get away without opening the doors if we have enough opening in our eaves. If we have really shut up our eaves and our windows, then we might need to leave those doors cracked to move some air through that alleyway in the center of the barn. It's really pretty barn dependent. One of the things that I tell people to look for as an indicator of poor air quality is the amount of moisture that you're seeing condensed on surfaces first thing in the morning. So if you're seeing a lot of moisture condensing, it means we're not getting enough moisture out, so we don't probably have quite enough ventilation in that barn, and that would be an indication that we probably need to either crack some doors or crack some more windows or do something to try and move a little bit more air in that barn.
Great, that's very practical advice. Thank you. So in other areas of the world, it's summer, of course, or it's like Florida, so it's simply mild year round. And I know that people have broken out their stall fans. So in the barn where I keep my horse happy, we have a mixture of purpose design stall fans, industrial grade fans, and those plastic Walmart box fans among the borders. So a few years ago, I installed a fan that is designed for use in a horse barn, and I mounted it really high up, kind of at an angle over his feed bucket. And it points down at him in the summer. I like to think it provides him a little bit of relief from the summer heat while keeping off the bugs. I understand that you and your grad students have done some research on these fans or all types of fan use. What did you find?
Yeah, so we have done some work on fan use in the stalls, and what we really found was that the fans are really, they make us happy, and they do provide some air exchanges within the space, but what they don't tend to provide is really uniform air movement over the whole stall. Specifically, the box fans that you referenced from Walmart or any sort of box store, those fans really only provide a small area that gets air movement. So only where you attach them onto that grate with your bungee cord or however you're attaching them there, there's only a small area right in front of that fan that really feels any sort of air movement. Those higher mounted fans are able to develop a little bit wider jet, so you get air movement over a little bit more area. But again, the air movement is not extremely fast over most of the stall. And the angle that that fan is set at really changes where that air movement is felt. So we want to be really thoughtful about how we set up these fans to get air movement where we want it, because we're probably not going to get it everywhere.
Okay. What about I'm curious about your study design setup. I'm just trying to imagine what it was like when you were trying to collect this information. Did you put sensors on the horses themselves, or were they on pieces of equipment in the stall?
A great question. So the way we set up this study is we used two stalls, and in one stall we put a box fan on the grate on the aisleway, and the other one we had a mounted fan that was up by the eave, more like what you're describing, more of an industrial fan that's set up for a horse stall. In both cases, we put sensors in the stall, one sort of behind the feed bucket in a spot where the horse couldn't eat it, and the other one just above the door where the horse would go in and out of the stall. we didn't put any sensors on the horse themselves. And the other thing we did was we actually, when the horses were out in the pasture, we took air movements in a grid pattern at basically shoulder height at about 5 feet, and then also at about 4 inches off the ground throughout the stall, so we could see how air was moving within that stall when there wasn't a horse in there, so we could figure out where the best locations for air movement were. And what we found was that the orientation of the fan that was mounted really made the air movement either occur at that 5 foot level or at ground level. So depending on how we tilted that fan that was up high, it really changed where we felt air movement. So if we had, say, a horse that we like to ride and it likes to stand in the stall and we want to put air movement across its back while it's standing up, we might orient fan one way versus if we wanted to remove ammonia from the stall, something that actually that fan would be more effective at doing, we might orient the fan a little bit differently so it moved air across the ground to get some ammonia out of that stall if we had, say, a foal in there laying down quite a bit.
Yeah, their little nose right down there by the urine. That would really help.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Thanks for explaining that to us. So also at my barn, we use mostly pelleted wood bedding, the kind that you you kind of put the hose in the bag of the pelleted bedding and it expands and then you kind of open it up and spread it. But some stalls have traditional shavings also, because we do have boarders who take care of their own horses. So we often wet down the pelleted wood bedding daily to help with the dust. So what I realize here is that we've created both a dust and a moisture situation. Is there one that I should be concerned about over the other, and what problems might I be causing?
Oh, that's a great question. So with regard to bedding materials, each bedding material has different characteristics on how it produces dust, the size particles, and the amount of dust being produced varies quite a bit. Typically, interestingly, people tend to think hay doesn't produce a lot of dust. And the answer is actually that hay produces dust, but it produces a lot of very fine particles of dust. So we don't tend to see it as much when we're walking through a barn. Versus the wood pellets and the wood shavings, which tend to be more visible dust, but it tends to be larger particles that tend to fall out of suspension a little bit faster.
Okay.
We definitely need, with the pelleted wood bedding, we still need to wet it, because that's what causes it to react in such a way that it can then absorb urine. So it's not that we can not wet it and have it work correctly. We do need to wet it in some form or fashion. I think one of the really big things to know is that with all of these materials, we want to muck out our stalls, hopefully while the horses aren't there. And some of the data that's out there would suggest that if we have reasonable ventilation within about an hour, that dust level should go back down quite a bit after mucking out a stall, which tends to be one of the major spikes in dust levels within the barn.
That's really interesting. So what about people who use like leaf blowers to blow the aisle? Is that going to make it last even longer?
So the leaf blowers stir up a lot of dust. It wouldn't be my recommendation to use a leaf blower, especially if there's horses and other humans in the barn while you're trying to do that and you're not wearing some form of a mask while doing so. Although maybe now we're all wearing masks, so maybe it's not as bad. But in general, the dust blowers do disturb a lot of dust, but they don't necessarily move the dust and dirt out of the barn very effectively. You know, one of the things I challenge a lot of people on is moving air is different than providing fresh air. And a leaf blower isn't the most effective way to move all those particles out of the barn. It just stirs them up for a minute and then they settle back down over time. So we don't necessarily remove those small particles that we're trying to get out of the barn.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So if I were to have my own barn and have a concrete aisle, I probably would want to get one of the big brooms. Is that a better way to manage those types of situations?
Absolutely. Yeah, a broom will move a lot more of the particles without necessarily stirring them up into the air as much.
So how can I assess the ventilation in my barn? And if I don't see those dust motes floating in the air, is my space in pretty good shape?
That's an excellent question. So there's a couple things. I already mentioned the moisture being an indication of a lack of ventilation, but other things that would be indications of a lack of ventilation would be extremely high temperatures in the barn in the summertime, or extremely high temperatures in the barn in the wintertime. Most barns aren't really designed to be warm. They might be, say, 5 or 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than outside, but if you're seeing a barn that's, you know, 20 or 30 degrees warmer than outside temperatures, and you don't have a heater in that barn, that would be an indication that you have the barn shut up too tight. There's not enough air movement through it.
Okay.
And the dust, again, the particle sizes on dust is very tricky. So sometimes when you see those dust particles floating in the air, it's an indication that we have a lot of dust. Other times, the dust particles are not necessarily highly visible to the naked eye. Sometimes people will say, I didn't see any dust, but I have allergies. That would be an indication that you have a lot of smaller dust particles that are still causing reactions for you, but they aren't necessarily visible to the naked eye.
Yes, yesterday I was looking back at an article in one of last year's magazines where a source was saying that you shouldn't be able to see beams of sunlight in the barn because that's a sign of dust. Is that kind of a good indicator too if you're seeing sunbeams?
Yeah, well, that would absolutely, that's light reflecting off of very small particles. It's not always an absolutely perfect way to assess dust. I mean, but at the end of the day, there's pretty expensive equipment to monitor dust. So most people aren't going to monitor it qualitatively themselves.
Right. Talking about going back to temperature in the barn, do you recommend that people hang a few thermometers around, or do you just judge if whether it's too warm by feel?
I don't think it would be a terrible idea to have some thermometers in the barns. We've gotten some really nice equipment now that is waterproof and weatherproof that would provide you with a good temperature reading, usually with a digital display right on it. And sometimes it's nice to see how the barn is reacting. It's also sometimes nice to see how a stall temperature is versus an aisleway temperature. Mm-hmm. This is one of the real challenges with the barn environment is that typically we measure the barn environment where we stand. And we don't tend to stand in the stall with the horse to notice if it's hot where the horse is. We just notice in the aisleway where we're standing, where there's a breeze going, that it doesn't feel hot to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth sort of investigating the space where the animal is versus the aisleway where we tend to spend more of our time.
Yes, you know, last week I was getting my horse ready to ride, and I'll let him eat on his alfalfa as we're getting ready and in the stall. And I noticed that I just had to take my coat off and hang it outside the stall while I was grooming. I was getting a little too warm, so I hadn't really thought about that. I'll have to check that out. Maybe open up that window a little more. So
he produces a lot of heat. He or she, I'm not sure, but produces a lot of heat. Those animals are very effective at producing heat. So as long as we have a way for that heat to get out, it's certainly worth bringing some fresh air in.
Indeed. So what are some ways that farm owners can improve their ventilation in existing barns?
So one of the things, you know, I recommend is if you have openings, make sure that they really are open. So a lot of times there's something like bird netting over an eave. And what happens over time is that it gets filled in with, you know, dust and particles. And if those openings get too enclosed, then we don't get air through those eaves. Also, sometimes you'll see a lot of cobwebs and things like that up at the cupolas, and then air can't get out up at the top. So all of those are things that, you know, just general cleanliness will really help with. Also, if you're barn isn't oriented to take wind well, you can use larger floor fans to try and move some air down the aisleways. And while I mentioned that the fans are not necessarily really effective at cooling a horse by providing enough airspeed to do that, some of the times those mixing fans do move air from an aisleway into a stall. So if you think the stall isn't ventilating, but the aisleway is, that is an option for bringing fresh air into the stall. Just don't expect it to necessarily provide cooling for the horse.
Okay, that's interesting. Let's continue talking about barns for a second. So I'm thinking about our barn where we have big, heavy doors that shut, and there's not bars, but kind of like a chain link over the door. So that's what the ventilation is over about chest level for the horse, unless you leave your door open and you've installed some sort of stall guard or like a stall gate, so the horse can put its head out in the aisle. How much do those stall gates and those stall guards help with ventilation in the stall?
So the more open the stall is, the more air freely moves between the stall and the aisleway. So some of them are quite helpful, especially on a more closed in door that's, you know, heavy wood. So there are some benefits on some of those for exactly that reason. If you already had a very open grate style door, I don't know that you would gain as much benefit from a stall guard.
Okay. So you were talking about ways to improve ventilation in barns. How about indoor arenas? Do the same principles apply?
Yeah. So one thing I do encourage people to think about is, potentially, you may have to install a fan or some form of mechanical ventilation to try and exchange air unless you have some smaller openings. So some arenas have windows that can be opened. Other ones have doors and only doors. And sometimes in the wintertime, that's more challenging to just open a door all the way up. It provides too much air movement. But both are valid approaches, is just making sure that there are some openings, especially in the ridge and in the eaves, to allow some air movement through that space. The other real challenge with the arena is we want to only provide the right amount of air movement, because there's not always horses in an arena. So there are times when having it completely shut is not a problem, but there's other times when we really need a little bit of air movement while we're working horses in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are very fortunate at our farm to have a pretty large indoor arena. And I think the most people I see in there at once when it's busy is probably about 3 in the evenings, but we still keep the door open, the main door open, and it doesn't ever feel too stuffy or too, you don't see a lot of dust kicked up. So I think we've done a pretty good job of mitigating that. So if our listeners have the luxury of building their own barns and indoor arenas, what are some ways they can prioritize ventilation when they're working on the design?
The first thing I would say is really to spend the time to get the barn oriented correctly to take wind and take advantage of natural air movement. Especially on barns, if we can set it up so that we receive air into some of these stalls and it goes across the barn rather than always directly up the aisleway and then no air moves through the stalls, sometimes that's a real benefit. Sometimes we can do things like make our openings large enough. So one of the things that happens currently in a lot of barn design is a lot of barns, actually, and arenas are built sort of to human-occupied standards, which means we use a lot of really small openings in the eaves. It looks sort of like on the side of your house, you don't almost use the same sort of vinyl on the mm-hmm. eaves. And that doesn't really provide enough opening for air to come in those eaves to get into those stalls for those horses. So if we can open those up and just use some bird netting or something like that over those eaves to keep birds out of that area, that would be a far better option. Also, if you have cupolas, Most cupolas now sold in the US are only there to be attractive looking. They don't actually operate to ventilate. So if you're choosing equipment like that, finding ones that actually are designed to allow air movement are really important. Like taking advantage of those natural air movement, the orientation for wind, and then the eave openings and the roof openings, a lot of that ventilation will happen without you having to do a lot of management, which really helps.
So around here, we have a lot of those tobacco barns that have been converted into horse barns. I know I didn't ask you this earlier in our prep, but I'm just curious, are those kind of naturally already ready for horses, or do they need to be retrofitted a whole lot so that the ventilation is appropriate for them?
So this is a great question. So for anyone who's not from Kentucky, a tobacco barn is a wood-sided barn that is designed to ventilate. Usually they were located somewhere on a hillside or the top of a hill and designed to receive wind because we wanted the tobacco to cure in these barns and we wanted the air to move in and out all fall so that the tobacco would get warm and cold as temperatures tend to do here in Kentucky. We get a lot of pretty drastic swings in the fall going into the winter time. They are an excellent option for ventilation because they are actually designed to ventilate by the nature of how the barn is built. Some people find them challenging in the sense that you can potentially get some precipitation through the wood-sided barns because there are gaps between the pieces of wood. But I think from a ventilation standpoint, they are excellent. So I would strongly encourage people to use them for stalls. They work extremely well. I've even seen one used, a larger one, retrofitted to be an arena. They definitely had air movement. Now that takes a lot of structural changes to make that work that way because you have to take out a lot of wood. But they are a really interesting design that is actually very effective for moving air through those stalls.
Yes, some of my favorite barns around here are those tobacco barns. And it's interesting because I can remember riding my bike down there's a road near my farm, and I'd ride my bike down that road. And as I went past the tobacco barns in the fall, you could smell the tobacco just from like 20 feet away. So the ventilation is very evident there.
Absolutely.
So what are some future directions you hope to take with your research, Dr. Hayes?
Well, I think the questions just keep coming. This is pretty open area for research right now. There's not a lot of data. So things that we're working on right now, my student and I are really trying to figure out how much water evaporates from the footing, like indoor arenas, so that we can figure out how much water we really have to add. A lot of people don't know how much water to add, and they don't know how to keep their footing at the optimal moisture level. And it's challenging. It's not something you instinctively know. You just water when you find that you have dust. But figuring out how to maybe more precisely manage watering, footing, and then also really interested in and dust and air quality overall in both the barns and in the arenas, and characterizing that dust. As I said before, the dust is really a variable commodity, and really figuring out how much dust is there and how long it takes for that dust to settle back down, and if there's any strategies out there for reducing that dust level, that's certainly on my priority list.
Well, we really look forward to seeing those results and learning about what we can do to adapt our own properties. And finally, where can our listeners learn more about the research that you're doing?
Absolutely. So I do have a website at on UKY in the Biosystems and Ag Engineering Department, and also a number of extension materials. So for people in Kentucky that are looking for information like this, we have been actively working on producing extension publications related to horse facilities for your listeners.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I'll also mention that Dr. Hayes gave a presentation on these topics a few years ago that you can find at thehorse.com/139299. That's thehorse.com/139299, or you can simply search equine barn ventilation on thehorse.com search tool. So thank you so very much, Dr. Hayes, for sharing your time and expertise on this important subject. I really do appreciate you coming on the podcast and answering my questions.
Thank you.
I also want to thank our sponsor, Zoetis. For more from the horse, visit thehorse.com, sign up for our newsletters, or look for Ask the Horse Live wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Please join us next time as we explore the horse industry equine animators.